Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Page 11, 1.4, Riti. A philosophical elaboration upon the shloka anusharanam, the Vasudeva Sattva state of the purified mind, kshetragya, and the universal form. 1.4.1. From Srila Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavatam 4.29.69. No living entity is free from the cycle of birth and death unless he takes to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, in this verse, it is clearly stated, Satvika Nishte, that when one is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, in one stroke he is freed of past and future mental desires. Then, by the grace of the Supreme Lord, everything becomes simultaneously manifest within the mind. In this regard, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur cites the example of Mother Yashoda seeing the whole cosmic manifestation within the mouth of Lord Krishna. By the grace of Lord Krishna, Mother Yashoda saw all the universes and planets within the mouth of Krishna. Similarly, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, a Krishna-conscious person can see all his dormant desires at one time and finish all his future transmigrations. This facility is especially given to the devotee to make his path clear for returning home back to Godhead. Okay, so when one is situated nicely in goodness, then one can actually look at one's desires. Because if one is not situated in goodness, when you approach the desires, then either they arise within the heart, a desire to be involved with them, or a denial that they exist. Does this make sense? So that's why that means even though it's there before, to some degree you can see the desires, the tendency is we'll always keep them down. If we say, oh, you like to do, no. Oh, that's only in this situation, that. No, but actually we do. But by ego, we don't like to admit. So that's there. Or we think about it, and by contemplating, then attachment develops, and then we get involved. So on this platform, then Krishna allows that all the desires are seen at once. And when you see them all together, you can see the common thread. And you can also see that actually what you're looking for in those desires is that happiness that's actually found in Krishna consciousness. But we look for the material to fulfill that. We're on page 11. Are you just looking at it? You don't have page 11.
Yeah, and I have page 9 twice.
Oh, see, well, number 9 is zero. 9 is the Lord, so you have a double.
Just listen.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, I wrote.
Okay. Does that make some sense? Because when you see is that it appears that there's so many desires in so many different areas and so on, but if you look at it, they're all the same. They'll all be in the area of prestige, or all in the area of economics, or all in the area of beauty, or like this. There's only six opulences that we can have desires within. Right? And generally, people have, there'll be majority in one area or another. You know, the girl is very worried about her beauty, or the man is very worried about his influence, or they're worried about social status, you know, that'll go with the beauty or the influence, like that. But generally those interested in that aren't necessarily interested in knowledge unless the area of influence is something to do with intellectual, like this. Some people will have all six, but it's limited to there, and you can just see that common thread is self-centered, and it's not actually very important. But to do that, then one has to be in goodness, because those same things apply. is the same thing that is the denial that it's I don't have it, then when you see it and see it's not important, you can accept that. Right? I say it's not there because I'm not trying to get rid of it. I'm saying I don't have it. Right? So that means it's actually important. Otherwise, you would be happy to throw it out. Right? It's just like if someone comes into your house or something and finds something. Oh, you have it. Oh, no, it's not mine. It's someone else. Like that, because it is important to you. That's why it's there. Because otherwise they said, wow, what's this? Oh, yeah, what's that doing here? You just toss it out. Right? But denial comes because it's important, but you don't want to have any loss due to it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then in the same way is that ignorance then will make it, no, it's got to be important because it's my desire. So when you actually see it for what it was, you have to be able to say, yeah, this is not important. So the same ego that works one way, it will get in the way, it would get in the way the other way, even if you looked at it that way. That's why the mode of goodness is important. Right? And desire, then look at it when we'll desire it, and then there's also the element, well, what I desire is important. But actually, it's what Krishna desires, that's what's important. So unless these are fulfilling Krishna's need, then they're not so important. Right? Yes.
In the Vyuha Tattva, so Lord Vasudev, because the subject is Vasudev Sattva, attaining that platform.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada writes there that when we achieve Vasudev Sattva, then as Mother Yasoda saw the whole universe within Krishna's mouth, so we have a similar, any one of us can have actually the same experience of perceiving our desires, which means we're desiring objects.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this universe is. It's the conglomeration of all the objects of desire.
Of everybody.
Could ever desire through 8,400,000 species. Everything is there. So in Vasudeva Sattva Vyuha, which is Vasudeva Sattva is not to give too much away, but he's Krishna at Dwarka, Lord Vasudeva.
Mm-hmm.
So he's Lord Krishna, the same Krishna who is the Lord of the hearts of the gopis in Vrindavan, but at Dwarka he's the Lord of opulence. And that opulence in its original form, that means completely harmoniously Krishna's and Krishna's only, that is the original state of the Mahatattva. Srila Prabhupada also says, when you look at the famous Virat Rupa poster, that the golden lotus on which the Virat Rupa is standing, that is the Mahatattva. Because the Mahatattva is described as gold. And also, from where does this universe unfold? From the lotus. A lotus, of course, that comes from Garbhodha Kashyap Vishnu, who is Pradumna, a later expansion of the same Vasudev. But by that time, the modes of nature are in motion. And Vasudev Sattva means it's pure goodness because there is no activity of the modes of nature. As soon as there's even activity in the mode of goodness, what does that mean? That means it's being pushed by Rajaguna. There is some desire that person in goodness, that Brahmana who's performing that yajna, he's waiting for the dakshina from the king, you see. So it's a pure activity, but there's a motivation. But in Vasudeva Sattva, it means it's being done for Krishna only. And that's the nature of Dwarka. And that's the nature of the original Vasudeva and the Mahatattva. Mahatattva is actually described by Srila Prabhupada as the material energy, but he also describes it as pure, and he also describes it as transcendental. So it's actually the Lord's Bina Prakriti, it's Bhu Shakti. And because she's the earth, Srila Prabhupada said in one letter, the Mahatattva is at Krishna's feet. So that means Bhumi Devi. So this is her, and also everything comes from the earth. That's another way of looking at it. So there's these different aspects, but there's an original state. And our original desires, whatever we may desire now, as human beings, is as awful and as horrible, you know, when we look in the deep dark corners of our hearts and we see there the goblins and the ghosts still lurking, they actually have an original relationship with Lord Vasudeva in purity. And that is the meaning of seeing the universal form in the mode of Vasudeva Sattva. Because one actually sees the pure object of one's desires. In other words, the universe is there, the Mahatattva is there, but the modes of nature are not active. This is called the state, I believe, of Niyati. So it's a state after time, after material time stops. There's a state called Niyati. So everything is still there, but it is pure. It's not, you know, then we get to the point of good, better, best. So this is good. But as I say, sometimes good is the enemy of the best. Best means Vrindavan. So as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, you know, we don't want to get hung up in Aishwarya. Although the Lord's Aishwarya is pure. But and this becomes actually pretty much beyond our power of explanation, because it's getting to the core of Veda, Aveda, Tattva, out of this Aishwarya of the Lord. But that is what Brahma himself sees in the second canto, that out of the Lord's Vaikuntha Aishwarya, the material universe has its beginning. Because we will see later on in the second canto, Brahma seeing the original form of Ahamkara in Vaikuntha means as Sadashiva. So everything in this material world which we are now trying to get free of is there in Vaikuntha in its pure form. But anyway, we're already in an inconceivable platform. But we know from our acharyas that the actual goal is Krishna in his best feature, which is Vrajaraj, the Lord of Vraja, or Vraja Kumar. He's not even Raj of Vraja. He's not even the king of Vraja. He is just a little boy there. And it's Srimati Radharani who's the Rani of Vrindavan Dham.
Yeah. You have this.
But it all starts with this.
Mm-hmm.
First, you have to. That's why Prabhupada made ISKCON as he made it, and that's why Prabhupada said, the actual sign of Krishna consciousness, he once said, I may have mentioned this before, after a visit to Switzerland, he was taken there for his health to a place called San Moritz, where you see this Mount Matterhorn. But there had been a snowstorm overnight. And so when Prabhupada woke up and looked out the window, he just saw what he called white hell. He turned to Shamsundra, who was a servant, and said, get me out of here immediately. So they went to England, and then Prabhupada gave a lecture, his first lecture in London, and he began to transcendentally sarcastically refer to where he'd just been. He said, in Krishna consciousness, there is pool supply, not snow supply. So In Krishna consciousness, Krishna gives everything that is needed. Actually, Srimati Radharani or Subhadra Devi, Subhadra is the Bhadra of the devotees. And so she will give all opulence for the service of Krishna. And we have to pass through that to get to Vrindavan. We have to get free of all these desires. We have to be able to use everything in Krishna's service. And like Prabhupada said, Krishna can give you the world. He was comparing his disciples to the Pandavas. This is the early days. Krishna can give you the world in 18 days. But what would you do with it? See, that's the problem. And that question is still very pertinent. So many years later. What would this movement do with the world? I mean, when I talk to devotees, most devotees don't even know what's going on in the world. I was talking this last night about the great battle that's building up on the Vedic, and the Vedas are the front line. And we were talking about that yesterday, how the Shaivites and the Mayavadis and the Buddhists are so far ahead of us in preaching to the intellectual class. And we've become the clowns of Vedic culture. That's editorializing, you know. The books by this David Frawley and Subhash Kak and Robert Svoboda, you know, these books are entering the intellectual field of the world, and they're changing the world view. The intellectuals of the world are now beginning to accept India as the original home of the Aryan civilization. The Aryans didn't come up from outside, they started in India and it spread. All these things, which are important for them to know, they're accepting, but they're hearing it from the wrong people. And in the middle of all this, what are the right people doing? If I talk to devotees about these issues, it's very hard for me to find one who even knows these things are going on. You see, because ISKCON has become an island adrift in the ocean, far, far away from Prabhupada's mission. Or he said, what did he say his mission was? I have come to the West to kick the scientists in the face with a boot. And scientists means these people, because these people are interpreting the Vedas in terms of in the same scientific way. Science is changing. It is already in the last century, especially with the discovery of quantum mechanics by these physicists who had been reading the Upanishads. That was the beginning of it. And it continues, and it goes on more and more and more. And now the scientists are actually working. I have a DVD, 50-minute DVD, because Prabhupada said when he came, there's no real scientists here in the West, because no one is studying the difference between a living body and a dead body. I have a 50-minute DVD, documented DVD, of in how many institutes in the United States especially, but also in England and other places, how many institutes, universities, U.S. Naval Annapolis Academy are doing just this. And the reason they're doing it, they're studying consciousness, is because they want to get mystic powers. And in the field of quantum mechanics, they've already done at least a half a dozen successful experiments in what's called teleportation, which means transmitting an object that's a microscopic, I mean, no, submicroscopic, subatomic object, but it is, you know, a little unit of material energy from one place to another place instantly without passing through space or time. And it's been done over a field of kilometers. In CERN, they have this big atom smasher around Lake Geneva. and they have moved such directly through, you know, it doesn't pass through time and space, it's here and then it's there in an instant. That was Einstein's whole problem with quantum mechanics. He could never accept it because he understood mathematically the consequences means one thing can be in two places at the same time, and they're already proving that. And 20 years ago, that was science fiction. Now it's science. Right now, science fiction means that I'm sitting here, and then I can just psychically plug myself into some type of tronic network and transfer myself instantaneously over to the temple to have darshan of the deity. That's science fiction now. But it may be science in 20 to 50 years. How many of you knew these things? Ah, you, and you, why do you know them? Oh, they're here tomorrow. She knows about this too.
I'm from here.
See, this is the problem. This is the actual front. Battle going front. And Prabhupada wanted us to be the winners of this war. We don't even know about the war. And that's the aim of these classes at this particular institute, is to prepare those who are wannabe preachers, the type that Srila Prabhupada wanted, fighters, soldiers, to go out and meet the enemy, who had brains as big as the Graf Zeppelin, you know, heads as big as the Graf. But the weak point is their heads are filled with hydrogen. It just takes one spark for Krishna consciousness, the whole thing will blow up. But you have to know how to ignite that spark. And that's the problem. We don't. I could go on and editorialize more, but I don't stop. But this is the real issue. And this is why we're making this study guide as we make it, introducing these points. You know, you may find these points to yourself. You may wonder, you know, what relevance does it have to me? Well, maybe it doesn't have any relevance to you, but it certainly has relevance to what Srila Prabhupada wants of you. Whether or not you're prepared to give what Srila Prabhupada wants you to give, that's another question. All right.
So this element of being able to, deal with, you have one principle, but it has a few different manifestations. Like in the prayer, we see it, especially like in the prayers to any of the forms of Balaram, Sankarshan, Ananta, Nityananda, they'll just, in the same verse, mention all the names. You know, it's like when you're talking, I mean, sometimes you get that, but they talk about Krishna and it'll be Krishna and all this pastime or that pastime, or, but it's always Krishna doing the pastime. You know, Krishna killed this one or that one. And then in a different verse, then you'll have, you know, how he has Ramachandra, then he did this, and then is this one he did that. Generally, it's different verses. But with Balaram, they tend to put it all in one verse. You get all the different manifestations in one. So this principle is that what the material, it means the pure form in the material world is based on, they say it's coming out of the dwarka because of the opulence, because of that particular variety, that Krishna is there, and Krishna is everything, but at the same time is, how you say, you know, they see him basically as super soul, like that. And so then, and super soul is who is the one who is entering into everything, you know, he's the, so that element there is here in its purest form, and then from there, because it's a reflection. So means you have Vrindavan, you have Mathura, you have Dwarka. So that's going to be the closest to here. And so then that will be here, and then the others will go back. So it's the closest. So then in the pure goodness, then you have that kind of a flavor, like that. Does that make any sense? So being able to accommodate that you have these few different levels kind of at once. So it's the one is there, but the other underlying is inherent in it. But it won't. It's not necessarily manifest except for in a different realm. Right. You know, Krishna knows everything, but in Vrindavan he doesn't really bother with that. But in Dwarka he'll know more. But in Vaikuntha he knows everything. Does that make sense? So he does know everything, but he, you know, basically relegates knowing everything for Vaikuntha. Because it suits there. So in Dwarka you'll have all these elements of the Vasudeva. But it's these elements that we see here, the connected with self-realization, and that, then they're relegated to here. Does that make sense? Because it's basically that element of knowledge is a lower tattva. You know, it's not considered the best, because then in rasa, then the element of knowledge, how you say, kind of gets in the way. If you know how everything's going to work out, it's not necessarily fun. It's when there's the element of surprise. So for Krishna, then that yoga maya becomes more fun than knowing everything. Does that make some sense? Okay. Yeah. So like that is, you pull all these things together. So it's like everything's there, all the devotees are there, all whatever is there that happens there. Like we even see in Dwarka, they get into all kinds of politics and this and that, Akura and the Shamantaka jewel and all these things. So things happen. But it's all centered around Krishna. You know, so then we have that element here, is that when it's there, then whatever desires you have, it's all part of the universal form, and you see it in that. You just see it's just something that everybody else has. Because that's also one of the points of goodness. I mentioned the Gita is some of the mode of goodness sees one soul. Like that. It means it's different living entities, but the nature is the same. They're saying, in other words, all the living entities are Brahman, so therefore the same quality is there. So you don't make a distinction by what body it's in. You know, it can be in the elephant or in the sage or in the dog or the dog eater. It's the same soul, so you don't make a distinction. So you have the element of respect and everything towards every living entity. Mode of passion is you see differences. Oh, there's Christian souls and there's Catholic souls and there are Protestant souls, and the Protestant souls are going to hell so you can kill them, or the Catholic souls are going to hell so you can kill them. So that's mode of passion. And mode of ignorance, you don't see souls at all. It's just the extreme. Is that me?
Seafood.
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 The same thing.
Yeah.
The universe is just something you eat.
Yes. Chocolate covered. Yeah. Okay.
I'm gonna
go to sleep. Okay. So, does that make some sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything? 142. The student should try to see how the previous quotation relates to what Sukadeva Goswami teaches in Canto 2, Chapter 1. For reasons given earlier on, see point 1.1 of the study guide plus 1.1 subsections, it is most noteworthy that this canto and chapter open with an invocation to Lord Vasudeva. In the above quotation from Canto 4, the term Sattvika Nishte should be understood in the context of a key theme under examination in the verses of this Chapter 1 of Canto 2. What is that theme? It is the mind. And so the first line of verse 69, chapter 29, canto 4, reads, Sattvika Nishte Manasi. The word Manasi means in a mind. Srila Prabhupada translates the phrase Sattva Eka Nishta as full Krishna consciousness. This obliges us to conclude that Sattva, literally goodness, means in this verse pure goodness, or Vasudeva Sattva. Nishta, literally faith, means Paramatmanishta, being a devotee of Lord Krishna, CCC Madhya Lila 3.8 purport. Bhagavatam 2.29.69, with these words, Satka Nishte Manasi, defines the qualifications of one who is able in his mind to associate constantly with the Supreme Lord, and thus observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does.
Did I quote the whole verse there?
No, he said, observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does.
Yeah. If you look at that verse in the fourth canto, you'll see that that is one definition of Krishna consciousness. The way he translates it, he says, Krishna consciousness means to see the universe in the same way the Supreme Lord does. So this is what we've just been reading about, seeing the universe as Mother Yashoda saw it from Krishna's mouth, is a stage of realization of Krishna consciousness. So if we're still seeing the universe as something alien, you know, a weird place, we're not seeing this as the deity form of the Lord. Because this is what the Vedas are actually, prior to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole Vedic library or encyclopedia is just leading people through this to see the universe as a sacrifice, which is the whole point, which is one of the points of the Chaturshloki. Sacrifice is a word, it's an interesting word. The face of sacrifice comes from Latin facere, which means to, like we get the English word factory from it. And sacra, sacrum, sacred. So it means a sacred act. So actually the creation of this universe is a sacred act of the Lord. And the whole Vedas, the whole purpose of all the yajnas and all the varnashram dharma and all of that is to simply to get people to come to that level of seeing the universe, because that's what the Lord says. He tells Brahma, I have created this world out of sacrifice. It is maintained by sacrifice and it is withdrawn into me by sacrifice. And also, we human beings, our purpose is to live within this world in sacrifice. And then that is Krishna consciousness. As defined by Srila Prabhupada. Mm. So that's what that
Pasir is the Lord sees it.
What is it? Satvika Nishtha Manasi. That's always about in one's mind. Satvika Nishtha. Seeing Krishna everywhere.
There's also the Lord sees, if you see it how he sees it, then that means you're seeing it from his side, which means you can interact with him. You see it differently than the Lord, then what's the common point how you interact? You know what I'm saying? You say someone's a friend, or you have a relationship with someone because there's a common perspective. Mm-hmm. And based on that perspective, then you have your relationship. Well, the perspective is different, then you can't have a relationship. Because there must be some little differences just to create two. But there must be enough common that it creates a oneness, that there would be a variety of interaction. The more commonality, the more interaction can happen. I'm saying if you only are common on one point, then it's limited. But if you're common on, like let's say, someone is only a barrister, so therefore he only knows the judge on that level, or like that. But if he also is a personal friend of his, then he knows him in that also. So the more there's commonality, the more broad is the relationship, and the less common, the less So if you see the way the universe the way the Lord does, that is his manifestation for his pastimes, then you see it all in relationship to Krishna. If it's pastimes, then it's for his pleasure. If we see it different, then we'll think it's for our pleasure. Like that. Or just something to get away from, which is okay, but
it's tinged with the mode of ignorance.
Yeah, because it's just like, let's say,
it's the beginning. That's why Lord Shiva is both the Lord of the mode of ignorance and Shiva auspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the beginning of spiritual life.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he represents, you know, that's why Prabhupada said, Lord Shiva, he brings the worst of the demons. The demons who are impossible to reclaim. He acts as their God. He does all these, you know, the garland, skulls, the whole thing, rubbing his body with ashes of dead body to make himself as attractive as he can to the demons. So they, and he's Ashutosh, whatever you want, I'll get. And the demons are thinking, great, this is the kind of God we want around here. And then what he does, because no one can rectify these demons, just like with Ravana, he makes sure that Vishnu himself kills them. And that way the liberation, because there's no other way they can get it. That's his. So that's why he's both, you know, Bhutanath and Agora, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What's that other word?
Kalabhairava.
Huh?
Kalabhairava.
Yeah, Kalabhairava. Yeah. And at the same time, Shiva, auspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Mahadev. And even Brahma bows before Shiva, even though Shiva's his son.
Mm-hmm.
He's a greater Vaishnava than myself.
Do the go? The best of them, from what I see, is they live with Shiva in his place in the Brahman, like that. So it's kind of like they know about. Well, it's not so much as that. Because Sadashiva is non-different. He's Vishnu just in the mode of I am the destroyer. Like that. Because that's the difference between... Because you see from Dwarka you get two lines come out. One is the Vaikuntha planets as we know it with the 24 Vaikuntha deities. And the other is the Purusha avatars. You know, Karana Daksha, Kira Daksha and Garbha Daksha. The difference between the two of them is Vaikunthapati thinks I am God, while the Purusha avatars think I am the controller, I mean I'm the creator, the maintainer and destroyer. That's the difference, because in Vaikuntha there is no creation or destruction. So that's Vasudeva, Sattva. So that's why you have that element in the material world, because maintenance is there. And so Vishnu is there. And so in that way it's actually transcendental. But at the same time you have these two extra elements of creation and destruction. So that makes it different. So then that's done in that form of it. Then you have Hiranyagarbha creates and Shambhu destroys. So it is him. But it's just, I think it's mentioned that one of them, I think Shiva's the right hand and Brahma's the left arm. You know,
yeah.
It means they're
the two
sides. Is that, in other words, the heart is the one, but it's like he acts with one is the destruction and creation, like that. One might wonder why it's that way, but it just struck me now is because the feminine is always on the left, and the creation happens through the feminine. You know, while that destruction and that element or that existence that's masculine, so that would be Shiva, you know, and also then that puts him in the senior position, senior, you know, Shiva over.
It's interesting that in In the second canto, I don't remember if it's purport or right in the word for word translation, but Prabhupada says the actual cause of all of that is actually the time factor. And that's even beyond both Brahma and Shiva, that's Sudarshan. And that's why Sudarshan in the Pancharatrik scriptures, what we know about it, I've read Lakshmi Tantra, now I was just reading Adhirbhudna Samhita. I mean, they always have chapters and chapters about Sudarshan. Because even in Vasudeva Vyuha, the Sudarshan is there. So the whole question becomes, it's the cutting, you know, like sadhu is cut. So that's Sudarshan's. So he's cutting the difference between spiritual time, material time, and that all depends on the desire of the jiva. So for those jivas who want to go the material way, then he becomes the kala chakra. Wheel of time and sets everything into motion. And Shiva and Brahma are guna avatars. The agitation of the gunas is initiated by the time factor. And then those two come out as personalities. But in his pure transcendental form, Sudarshan is actually transcendental time. The Kriya Shakti. He's, so far as I can see, because his special name is Achyuta Priya, dearest to the Lord. So it just seems like the South Indian Vaishnava Sampradayas, they put so much stress on Sudarshan, just as we are putting so much stress on Lord Balaram, because they're actually, just like Lord Balaram becomes Lord Sankarshan, who is the time factor. Ananta Shesh. Shesh. This world is called Shesh because it's the remnant. Shesh means what's left over after the, you know, the initial sacrifice. Shesh also means the end of it. So Ananta Shesh is also the time factor. He's fallen on them. So in the Gaudiyas we seem to put more. Although Lord Chaitanya and Chaitanya Charitamrita, when they're traveling through, I think it's, they travel through Dandakaranya forest, yeah. And his Vaishnava associates were very afraid, and he turns to them, and he tells them, do not be afraid, for wherever Vaishnavas come together, Sudarshan Chakra is always there to protect them. So, also Narasampradaya, Sudarshan is glorified, but the point of the time factor is important to mention. But then Lord Shiva, Sadashiva, is also said to be the time factor, but then he's also said to be non-different from Sankarshan. Prabhupada said same to same, Sadashiva, Sankarshan, same to same.
Yeah.
And somehow they're saying simultaneously Sudarshan.
Well, that's the point, is that you have these different manifestations, but it's like any one person, you know, an interesting personality, he has so many facets of the personality, and that you'll see at different times. You know, they may be all very, you know, formal occasions, they can be very sober and very, you know, have a strong presence, the same time as if it's a light atmosphere, they can be very funny, you know, and if it's, or very clever, and then at another time they can be very practical and get things done, and so you see the different situations. So unless a situation comes, it doesn't give rise to that aspect of the personality. But Krishna is such that he expands, and all those aspects of his personality can all be going on at once. It's just then the ideal situation, ideal form to manifest that, it takes place. So then, you know, the whole thing of Balaram and, you know, how you say, Sankarshan, and
Yeah. It is very difficult to understand. And the Lord does that actually to provoke discussion about himself, because that's the whole point. In the Ahir Buddhya Sangita, which is one of the foremost Pancharatras, the whole thing of Sudarshan comes up because Narad Muni goes to Lord Shiva, Ahir Buddha, you know, who is wrapped with snakes, which Prabhupada says they represent Sankarshan. So you see the non-difference there. He's actually Sadashiva. And he goes to Sadashiva and he says, I can't understand Sudarshan Tattva. He witnessed Lord Vishnu killing a demon, Taraksha. A demon named Taraksha. I guess this is from some Purana. Who was armed with every conceivable weapon in the universe. Every weapon of the demigods, you know, the astras. There's two kinds of weapons. There's astras, which are controlled by mantras, and there's the yudhas, like something you hold in your hand. Mm-hmm. So he had them all. He was showing many, you know, many, many thousands of arms, and he had all these astras. And it said, Lord Vishnu appeared, and with he sent out his Sudarshan, and this demon Taraksha disappeared into the flames of Sudarshan like a moth going into a fire with all of his weapon. Just was gone. And Narada saw that. And then he went to Lord Shiva, Sarashiva. Ahir Buddha, Ahi means snake, so it's specifically connecting Sadashiva with Sankarshan. And he said, what I saw, I don't understand. I just witnessed this. Who is this Sudarshan? And then there's all these revelations. And so Krishna, these things are very, even Narada can't understand, they're very mysterious, but they provoke, they're there to provoke discussion, this inquiry. And that's when we get to the Chaturshloki. That's the concluding of the, that's the fourth one. You must keep inquiring, keep inquiring, keep inquiring up to this. You know, which means since the Lord is unlimitedly expanding, there's no end to the inquiry. So that's why always they're meant to be mysterious. We can never, we can talk about them and we can get some insight, but we can never. It's what is that word? Akshara, or arhoksaja, isn't it? Arhoksaja, Prabhupada explained. It means aksaja refers to the Sanskrit alphabet, and adho, one who pushes down. So that means words can never encompass him. Although we use words to become Krishna conscious, we can never think that
the word itself,
you know, the words capture him.
Yeah.
Because no one can capture Krishna except in the heart. That's another thing about all that about Sudarshan, and yet he's a Chuttakriya. That's why he's the weapon of last resort. The Lord will use his club, he'll use his bow and arrow. These are actually all expanded from Sudarshan, and he'll use all them first. He'll use Sudarshan last, because he doesn't want to be separated from him, even in the instant that he goes and comes back. Or it's actually that quantum moving through space and time. Not moving even through space and time, but even for that whatever it is. Whatever it is. The Lord can, he wants him back. Because in the being Kriya Shakti, being Balaram, then he's the protector of the Rasa Mandala. He's, you know, he's doing so many internet services.
That question.
I understand the right sense of things you've been saying in recent times and what Maharaj just said this morning. Is it proper understanding that Vasudev Sattva, that purity is coming from lack of the time element, not vegetable, and we have to enter that state and see the subtle body has to be completely dissolved? Is that proper understanding?
Not necessarily, no. The subtle body is there because the living entities don't lose the subtle body until they leave the material world. So whenever the Lord breathes in, we go into the Lord, but we go with the subtle body. But the point is it's just like, that's the difference between, it means you have this difference between, you have Sankarshan and Aniruddha, and those are very clear. Sankarshan is the elements of the field. Aniruddha means the result of that you gain from the field, or the experience of that field that you'll get in gaining it. But what's very important in there is that the switch is Prajumna, because you have this field, and it's just there. Right, and you have some results that are calculatable. But if you don't have the desire to operate the field to get the result, then it doesn't happen. So that's Prajumna, that's the attractiveness. That's why there'll be so much emphasis on the Madan Mohan aspect of the Lord, is that he's the most attractive, because otherwise we're attracted to the material world. So because we're attracted, therefore we deal with the material world, we want the material results, so we'll make the material endeavor. But if you're not attracted, there is no endeavor. You know what I'm saying? It means, it's just like, let us say you've just had the biggest feast you've ever eaten, right? And now if we, and you can't, you, it means even thinking about food, you know. But now if we plunk you down right in this room full of all your most favorite preparations, unlimited, nobody's there, but you won't care. So it's the ideal field, but because there's no desire, there will be no activity. Yeah, is that?
In third canto, Kapila explains it is bhakti that dissolves. See, there's a, this is Krishna consciousness, but is not the same thing as prema bhakti.
Yeah.
Vasudeva Sattva. It's to try to help devotees understand. I give the example of imagine. You could get to Goloka Vrindavan by a transcendental airline, Goloka Airlines.
Goloka.
So if you had, if you could pay the price for the ticket. So Vasudev Sattva is like being in the, actually it's like being in the airplane. Vasudev Sattva means you're in the plane takes off, and you can look down on the world that you are living in, and you see it all below you, and it's going away. But you're still seeing it, but you're not coming back to it. And then when you land in Goloka Vrindavan, I mean, to enter that place, it's a bit more than just stamping the passport. You've got to get the new, you've got to get a spiritual body. So the customs officers there equip you with the spiritual body, so you can. Yogamaya does that. And so the price for that plane ticket is, it is bhakti, and this is the development of bhakti, is what's being described here in stages. But this is the first stage. You can't have this without the development of bhakti. You can't achieve Vasudeva Sattva, because this Vasudeva is Krishna. But it just means the stage of leaving the material world forever. But the material world is still in view. Therefore that example of Mother Yasoda seeing a whole universe in Krishna's mouth, but she was seeing it in Krishna's mouth.
You have the, see, is that all living entities, when the Lord breathes out and when he in his glance and like that, the living entities enter the pradhan, and by them entering with the time element and false ego, that becomes mahat tattva. Technically, that is Vasudeva sattva, but the living entities aren't conscious that I'm in Vasudeva sattva. Therefore, they don't really get the benefit. So then that thing's there, that oneness and all that.
There's no bhakti.
Yeah, and there's no devotion. Right? Just like they merge into the Lord, but they don't know that they're merged into the Lord. So...
What's that Prabhupada talking about when he talks about the dry coconut? Like, there's that separation. What is that?
That would be basically the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Because, see, all these things for us, see, there's always the technicality of it, and then there's the state we obtain of it because of bhakti. Just like we were saying, is that Brahma-Bhuta and mukti are synonymous, but mukti means without bhakti.
This is in the second canto. There's the term labdho prashanti, which is describing the sages who live in the region of Brahmaloka. They're said to be liberated, all their desires are satisfied. The only thing that moves their hearts is that they look down upon the poor living entities in the planetary systems below, and they want to help them. And Prabhupada says sometimes they descend as messiahs. That's the only reason they're still within the shell of the material universe. That's called labdho prashanti. And then later in the Bhagavatam, probably speaks of a similar word, but it's swarupopalabdhi, when one actually attains one's swarup in the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these are the two different technical terms.
In other words, Brahma-Bhuta for us means you have become freed from the material world. You have your spiritual form, but at the same time you don't have prema, right? So you're in between the two. That's why bhava bhakti is not counted as prema. You know, it's like a madhyam pure devotee. They still haven't attained the ultimate perfection. You know, it's a pure unalloyed devotional service. They've come to pure devotional service. And they're situated in the spiritual form, they're free from the material world. But at the same time, as the consciousness, it still has some fragrance in the material world. The example is given of the hing box. You take all the hing out, you wash the box, there's not a bit of hing in it, but it still smells like hing. So, like that is there, we're still used to doing things for ourselves. Though we don't have any specific selfish or a separatist mentality, just that, you know, it's there and we're interested in it. So it has to be through association that we want to please Krishna. And then if we take that up, then that matures where then instead of being simultaneously in the material body and the spiritual body, one inherits the spiritual body, sampati, and that's all you are. You no longer are connected with the material. The spiritual form is gained in Shravana, like that, because it's there. But the point is it's your spiritual body. But the identification with it isn't perfect. Meaning that, because that form is there as a manifestation of one's pure love for Krishna, or pure unalloyed love for Krishna. That's why the spiritual forms are there. So until you have come to that, then your consciousness and your form aren't exactly perfectly, you know.
But I think we should say, We should have to say that since the whole of the Bhagavatam is aimed at the avidya, the process,
mm-hmm.
and Prabhupada always said concerning the 18th chapter, where he's saying, I give my Parma Bhakti to those who preach this message, that even though one may have be in that condition you're describing, if they're doing this mission
that the
Lord gives, then they're on their way back home, back to Godhead. And that's why, actually, one should not discuss... I mean, we're discussing for teaching, but in our Sangha, as devotees, we should not discuss the so-called faults of devotees who are Madhyamadikaris engaged in preaching, because there is that thing, it happens, you know. It was a very nice point Maharaj was making. I just want to kind of like retranslate it. It's just that we bring with us our conditioned nature, you know. I mean, you know, a devotee who was born in New York, grew up in New York, when he gives class, you still hear that New York accent, you know. And then the reaction of some people in the audience, because they have some attitude about New Yorkers, might not be so, you know, who is this, you know, because New Yorkers are kind of talk like tough guys, you know. So just because of that, the nature of that, you know, that slight, like you say, the scent of him, you know, then this person is maybe committing a mental aparad, that he's not very qualified because he talks like this. I remember one, I won't mention the names, but one sannyasi years ago glorified another sannyasi who was sitting in his class, and he turned, when the sannyasi was in the class, he turned to the rest of the devotees, a big assembly of devotees, and he said, he was praising the sannyasi who was sitting on the asan, saying, hasn't he given such a wonderful lecture? And then everyone, ki jai, and he said, so-and-so Maharaj, he's Jewish, he's a New Yorker, and he's a devotee in that order. And I would like to also mention that the sannyasi who made that remark is no longer a sannyasi. That's why we have to be very careful about seeing devotees like that. You see? That maybe the impression they make on our, you know, like Prabhupada says, takes two bangles to tangle. So maybe the impression on our consciousness, but if we react in a conditioned way to the conditioning that we're perceiving, then we're making an aparad. So that carrying, so that that's an important point that Bhaktivinoda Thakura makes in the Harinam Chintamani. That's one of the sources of Namaparat, is to consider the, you know, that slight sense of, we all carry with us, I mean, we have this body and we have to serve Krishna in it. But we also have to be endeavoring to be more and more Krishna conscious, which means to be more and more conscious of other devotees, and the Sangha has to become sweeter and tighter. And like you were saying before, finally we see the Lord in everyone's heart, and then one is actually acting, able to act perfectly, except for the demons who don't want to see the Lord in their heart.
Gajraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanitai Gaur Premanandi.